Wasn't Anger But a Longing, a Pot Together 2015 collaboration between Girl Marauders as the writer and Lucy Fuchs 5 as the pot vicar. Summary: Natasha and Steve go on a Finding Bucky road trip. Natasha worries about the men she loves. A thunderstorm has broken over the small Midwestern town, rain falling down hard. Natasha's been watching it from her hotel room window, a cardigan pulled around her, while she waits for Steve's return. Right now, she's practicing stillness, ignoring the top of her head and the way it itches, and her thighs protest for her uninterrupted sitting in the dark, gray-washed room. The scar tissue on her back and around her hips ache, and her left shin feels cold and tight, most definitely affected by the wet weather outside. It's also a reminder of when Russian doctors set the once broken bone with a steel pin when she was a child. This discomfort, it's nothing. It's momentary. In her line of work, she has to deal with injuries much worse than these old scars. And her life, or the lives of others, may one day depend on her ability to overlook the pain. Perfect stillness is an asset to her, and the ability to maintain it must be constantly practiced. Her whole life is about being prepared. She sees Steve's truck, silver and generic, pulling into the hotel parking lot below. Steve steps out of his truck and ducks his head under the rain, shrugging a heavy sports bag over one shoulder. Natasha scans the other cars, the windows that overlook the parking lot, and exhales with relief when she doesn't register any threats. She unfolds from her position at the window, gracefully rising from her spot once Steve makes it across the lot and to the hotel's entrance. He can handle himself from there. Natasha closes the curtain and turns on the light, blinking slowly against the sudden bright yellow light. There's food, fruit, cereal, and the assorted snacks needed to keep the metabolisms of a super soldier and a trained since birth spy going. She grabs an apple, taking a bite after sitting on the double bed with a folder of maps. Hydra hunting is long and slow work, mostly boring, but interspersed with short, sudden bursts of violence. Sam has a life and a job and a family who expects him to be in certain places at certain times. So kicking Hydra in the face in covered Midwestern bases has become Steve's, and by extension, Natasha's job. A key card clicks in the hotel door. Natasha lets her hand drift over the gun on the bedside table without looking up from the maps she's reading. It's only Steve, however, pushing the door open with one shoulder, phone in one hand, his bag and key card in another. The door shuts behind him, and Steve drops his bag in front of it, sitting down by Natasha's feet. She lifts them up and moves her eyebrows, and he, well trained by now, moves them into his lap. Her feet got cold. We'll be in Iowa City tomorrow, Steve says into the phone, and there's a soft, staticky reply, just beyond Natasha's range of hearing. It's probably Sam. They've told very few people where they are, and keep even fewer updated on their movements. Tony knows they're in the country. He paid for the truck and their new fake identities for what he's calling their road trip. She checks in with Clint once a month on the dark web, on the single-use website they've built for check-ins. Steve nudges her feet and passes her the phone. Hey! Sam's voice is teeny, but warm and close. Hi, she says back, smiling and setting her maps aside. How's it going? Kinda, he sighs. I'm disappointed I didn't get to eat corn in the cup with you guys every day. Natasha chuckles and Steve smiles. His hearing is way better than hers. He's totally eavesdropping. She looks over at the pile of cereal and Walmart snacks and raises her eyebrows at Steve. Knowing him, he must be famished. Yeah, we haven't eaten much corn on the cob. At least not that I recall, she says, feeling the ironic twist to her mouth. Well, I hope you do eat some vegetables. Don't let Mr. Metabolism tell him he can eat Lucky Charms every day. I don't care what nutrition was like in the freaking 1800s, Sam says in a familiar and comfortable snarky tone. We'll look after each other, Natasha says. Sam worries about them, and she misses him. She cannot be a warm, safe place for Steve the way Sam is, a man of genuine compassion and kindness. Be good to yourself, Nat, he says. You too. Take care, she replies, and hears Sam breathe out one last time before he hangs up. She tosses the phone to Steve. So, Iowa City tomorrow? She asks. Steve nods. It's small, so no one goes looking there. But there's enough people to stay a stranger. Good place to go to ground, he says, and Natasha nods. I will do the same. If he's in the area, it's a good place to start. He's almost definitely in the area. Their fights with high-dress minions have grown fewer and farther between. The last base they found was a burnt-out shell. Someone had hit it before them. And there aren't many people who can do that level of damage on their own. Steve wraps a hand around her foot and she flexes, poking her big toe into his palm. He looks up at her, as much as a man twice her height can, and gives her the small happy smile that's been growing on him for the past months. She would have to be made out of stone not to be moved by that open grin and his long eyelashes, and the slow, tender way he slides his hand up her calf. She sits up straighter then and leans forward, and his smile shifts into something fiery and slyer. She wants to laugh, feels amusement bubble up inside her, but keeps it quiet. Steve has a face like a book. She always knows what he wants. He kisses her slowly, sweetly, catching her lip just slightly between his teeth before they catch their breath, and she puts her feet out of his lap to lean forward and chase more of those kisses. Iowa City is quiet in the early morning. They left the motel in the no-name town before the sun had risen. It's only just peeking over the horizon now. As they begin approaching a destination, Natasha watches normal early morning things happen. Someone in a service uniform opening the security gate over at a subway, and the night shift leaving McDonald's, tired looking and glassy eyed. She yawns and leans back to pull her hair into a ponytail. Keeping her hair this long is mostly a hassle. "I should get a haircut," she says, looking across at Steve.
"Are you allowed to do that?"
Steve asks, turning off the street that took them into town. She shoots him a hard look, but he isn't looking at her. The question, she realizes, wasn't mean-spirited, just simple curiosity. "I doubt I'll get another assignment anytime soon," she says, with raised eyebrows. Fury is still licking his wounds and testing the loyalties of both old and new operatives. Shields active at only the lowest levels at the moment. "I hate long hair," she says after a pause.
"We'll find a hairdresser without CCTV," Steve says, without arguing.
There's a Best Western, surrounded by industrial plots and a strip mall on their left.
"Turn in here. We'll get settled and do recon today," she says.
The hotel lobby is yellow and cream, with a cluster of sofas and a bored-looking teenage clerk behind the front desk. Natasha slides their fake driver licenses, made by Tony Stark's own hand and bottomless pit of money, onto the counter. They read, "Natalie Martin and Steve Martin."
"Yes." Tony loves his puns.
"Hi, could we get a room with a king-size bed?"
"How long are you staying for?" the hotel clerk asks Natasha.
She turns to Steve.
"Honey, how long do you think?" she asks sweetly.
She turns back to the clerk. "We're road tripping," she adds with an apologetic smile. Steve sets her bags down next to her and slides an arm around her waist.
"How about 3 nights? He says, looking at her.
Natasha has years and years of pretending to be in love. The comfortableness of the lie around her to support her in this charade. Steve does not really, and the feeling in his eyes, the soft edges of his gaze, makes her shiver. She does not want him to love her. He deserves better. He deserves Sam, or the person he thinks the Winter Soldier was, or is. She nods and smiles. Nothing shows in her eyes. She knows it.
"That sounds perfect."
There's nothing spectacular about this hotel room, even when compared to the other ones they've spent the night at. Steve drops their bags on a chair while she digs through her purse and starts taking out trip wires. She sets one up over the window and one by the door.
Their routine in a new place is easy, especially after the long months of practice. They'll go out later and split up, walking parts of the city where it's easy to hide and scoping out locations. They'll do it obviously without hiding their faces or the fact that they're looking. It's taken a while for Natasha to stop thinking of the Winter Soldier as a target. They are not here to neutralize him. He's a wounded animal. They're here to help. Steve drew the short straw this time, so he got industrial areas and motels. Natasha gets residential areas, although they specifically pick those where there are boarded up houses or it's easy to pass unnoticed. It's the afternoon now, and there are people out and about, reducing both risk and effective sightlines. The hair at the base of her neck prickles, which is all the warning she gets. It's enough to catch a glimpse of a dark figure rounding a corner, moving with a solid purpose. She grabs her phone and starts moving, dodging around pedestrians and trying to keep a visual on the figure. They're the right size and build for Barnes, and moving like someone's fleeing. Her instincts are the best. I've got a distant visual, almost definitely him. Get yourself over here, fast, she says, as soon as Steve picks up.
On my way, Steve replies without questioning her.
The phone call ends with a beep and Natasha starts moving faster. If Barnes is anything like Steve, he cannot run her, but he might not be trying to. She's not running, and neither is he, so they're both maintaining this charade of being normal people, doing very purposely errands. It's a good sign. At one point, Barnes glances behind him, and Natasha catches a glimpse of a jaw, dusted with stubble and wide eyes, before he turns away again. When he stops suddenly, Natasha checks her sightlines and then swears under her breath. Steve's on his other side, just appear around the corner, and they're unwittingly cornered Barnes between them. Barnes, of course, starts running.
God damn it!
She says, and she can almost see Steve swear as well. They both start running, but they were almost equal distances from Barnes to begin with, and Steve is faster than her. Barnes tears off around a corner, with Steve just a few meters behind him, and Natasha slows down. Steve can catch up with him, and if it's only the two of them, they can hug it out or fight it out as necessary. She wouldn't be useful, and outnumbering Barnes might escalate the situation. She'll head back to the hotel, report back to Sam, and make sure there's a safe base camp for Steve to come back to. Natasha jogs back to the hotel, just to keep in practice of moving quickly when needed to. None of the trip wires in the room have been triggered, and everything else seems secure. One of their many burner phones is sitting on the bedside table, and she dials Sam's cell number.
Hey,
he says when he picks up. Natasha wants to laugh. It sounds like he has a lot of food in his mouth. We've had a visual. Steve's trying to make contact now. There's the sound of frantic shooing and then swallowing.
Oh shit, really? Everyone okay?
far as I know, she says back, through a smile. I'm waiting for check-in now. Call you as soon as I know anything? Thought you'd like an update.
Yeah, definitely, Sam says. I'll be on the first flight I can get. You still the same place?
Yeah, we are. It'll be good to have you here. We'll need all hands on deck. Nobody's moving from here until we're done.
She opens her mouth to say something else. Maybe how much she misses Sam, or how glad she'll be to see him. They're careful on the phone, but she wants to let something slip. She doesn't get the chance to do so anyways, because the phone Steve has the number for starts ringing.
I gotta go, she says quickly, and then hangs up. Sam will understand. She dives for the phone at the end of the bed and thumbs accept call.
Yeah? She says into the phone.
Hi, Steve says softly. She feels herself let out of breath she didn't know she was holding. She knows she can trust Steve to look after himself, but she worries.
Bucky says he thinks he can meet my friend.
Really? She says. How is he?
She hopes Steve hears the quieter, "Are you sure?" in that question.
I think he'll be all right. We've talked. Come unarmed, though.
Natasha nods, even though Steve can't see her. Weapons will make her feel safer, but she'll manage.
I trust you, she answers.
Give me a location and I'll be there in 10.
The Winter Soldier moves calmly, yet powerful, like a big cat. Natasha's afraid, though, deathly fearful. She was made a weapon when she was a girl, molded and diverted, like water taught to flow in a new direction. This man was disassembled and remade from broken pieces. She is a single blade, and he is a thing of sharp edges. He could break her. He could kill her. He has tried.
She does not move. Steve told her to hold her ground, to be unarmed, and she keeps her hands empty and still. Her legs want to shake, but she tenses against them. She is ready to run if she must.
He comes to a halt just before her, leaving a space between them slightly longer than his arms reach. He is not the only fighter used to wary, ready weapons.
The Black Widow, he says in a low, dark voice. It rasps, unused for names and words.
Natasha Romanoff, she says, trying to make it an addition, not a correction. There is a long pause. Steve stands a few feet away, unmoving, his face a tense, stony mask.
The Winter Soldier, she says, and although it's in English, her mouth is remembering the shape of those syllables in Russian. He nods, and the lank hanging parts of his hair shake.
James Barnes,
he says, though he sounds less certain now, and he glances back at Steve, who nods. She seems to take some comfort from that.
Steve looks less nervous now. He looks open and wanting, keen, like he's waiting for something. She reaches out a hand, open and turned at the wrong angle to be an attack. Barnes, who she can just about refer by surname, stares at it for a long moment, and then nods just once. He takes it, grips it, and lets it drop. It's not what Steve wants, and his mouth turns slightly down, but he's a creature of surprising optimism. She hopes Steve understands that this is all she can give to this broken thing that was once a man. He, who has taken blood from her, has taken life from those she knew and tried to protect. She's not afraid of many men, but she, even more than Steve, knows what a weapon is capable of. Barnes was a man, and perhaps he will become one again. But for now, he's an unloaded gun. Natasha will be ready for when the bullets fall into the chamber. Steve will stay with you tonight, she says, and meets Steve's eyes over Barnes' shoulder. Steve makes a small, grateful smile, and Natasha is comforted by it. She'll only be alone for a night. Sam will be on the first flight out. She won't be alone for long. Barnes doesn't thank her. How will he know to? Why will he know what's a sacrifice of a long, cold night? Natasha's grown used to Steve's warmth. His constant soft breathing keeps her ghosts and nightmares at bay. She's only half a weapon now, and the other half is all woman. It turns out that Sam's flight lands that afternoon. Natasha picks him up from the airport in Steve's truck. His smile is as friendly and easy as ever, and his body language betrays no tension. But Natasha is better than he is at hiding, if only slightly, and she can feel the undercurrent of nervousness in him. She has the edge. Sam learned to read people and mask his own emotions in order to help them. Natasha's abilities were carved forcibly. The threat of death and the desperate need to survive hanging over her. Once in the truck, where they're less visible and Natasha doesn't have to keep ducking her face away from street cameras, Sam leans over and kisses her, and she leans into it. It's good to see Sam, to feel that steady, no-nonsense presence all wrapped around her. When the kiss ends, he leans his forehead against hers and curls a gentle hand around her neck. "Please tell me I'm not the only one scared shitless," he says, with a small smile. Natasha laughs dryly before sitting back and starting the truck. "The Winter Soldier has tried to kill me 4 times, she deadpans, and Sam snorts. "So, yeah, completely shitless. I gotcha." Sam reclines back into the passenger seat, letting his head hit the headrest. Normally, "I'd like to open this relationship to someone new" conversation does not begin or include, "This is my resurrected from the dead boyfriend who tried to kill my girlfriend a bunch in the 1960s. Natasha laughs and then rolls her eyes, because really, "I am not that old. It just all happened in the 90s, she says, and Sam laughs. The laughter makes Natasha feel slightly less nervous on the drive to the warehouse where Steve is staying with Barnes. She's been trying to catch herself, to call him Bucky or James in her head, but for now, Barnes is what seems to be sticking. Sometime since she last saw them, Steve must have convinced Barnes to wash. He's clean now, and his shoulder-length hair is tied back away from his face. Natasha is surprised how young Barnes looks, even though she's used to Steve's own deceptive youth. She had never really taken a good look at the Winter Soldier's face before. Not really. He's handsome, she'll admit, although in a different way than Steve or Sam. Steve's sitting across from him, both of them on rickety chairs, dragged from somewhere, and Natasha can see Steve's angled himself, so his ankle sits next to Bucky's, just touching. Steve loves Bucky. He has maybe always loved Bucky. She wouldn't have followed him around on this 4-month road trip across America if she was not prepared to help Steve find a man he has loved for decades. But she is not stepping back. She's not going to leave Steve to fight this battle on his own. Neither is Sam. Sam steps past her, making enough noise so that Steve and Bucky can hear them coming. Bucky looks up first, and it takes him a handful of seconds to modulate his expression from wary to quiet. "Hello," Sam says, sitting down on an empty chair and reaching a hand out. His body language is plain and deferential, giving Bucky space and distance. "I'm Sam. This is Natasha. It's nice to finally meet you." The end.